have CCD when, and he left it blank. You know you have CCD when the government offers money for dead colonies. And that, no, that's true. In Canada, they began, in two provinces, they began to offer money for colonies that had been lost, and all of a sudden people came out of the woodwork that they had dying colonies. So that's one thing. The next, Marla Spivak told us that basically we shouldn't be able to keep our bees alive with all the things that she said. The one thing she did point out was that bees are often in agricultural environments foraging in a desert. They're out there working just one or two crops, and they bring that material back, and it may or may not be nutritious. On top of that, you then heard from Chris Mullen from Penn State about even if they're bringing back this monoculture thing, that it could be contaminated. So the food may be nutritionally less valuable, and yet it also could be contaminated with various pesticides and stuff. And then May Barenbaum actually gave a very encouraging talk in which she identified 8 genes that looked like they separated, you know, some of our CCD and non-CCD colonies. So that was very encouraging. And that goes with Colin's talk here, where we have a new system brought into bear on colony health issues, this IVDS technology, which again could offer the potential to find unknown viruses and stuff. Diana Cox Foster touched on the IAPV story, and also on just the fact that we are seeing a lot of different lineages within those bees, as far as a lot of different lineages within the IAPV story and viruses. Ian Sella brought quite a bit of information and a lot of new hypotheses is what's going on, but the viral integration into the honeybee genome and offering resistance to the bees themselves, I think, is very encouraging. And then Steve Shepard told us that, in fact, yes, we do have bottlenecks, and we are working with a very distinct and diminishing genetic pool within our honeybee populations. And more so, I took from Steve that with the loss of the feral bees, we actually have lost quite a bit in the way of genetic diversity. And again, I've already touched on Colin Henderson's talk. So anyway, I've been very encouraged by the talk so far. And I'm just going to briefly run through a little bit of things that I would like to highlight or emphasize. I'm not going to say very much about CCD and the symptomology and things. I am going to talk a little bit about some of the misconceptions and things, and a little bit about where we're going with some of the research. I think May Barenbaum touched on it, but we're focused here on honeybee health. But in fact, the National Academy of Sciences concluded that all pollinators are in decline. But they used honeybees as a poster child for that publication, because honeybees are the one species of bee that we have good, consistent data with over time. And they pointed out that the honeybee population in the U.S. has declined from about 5 million managed colonies to about 2.5 million managed colonies. And I'll show that in the graph here in just a second. In almond pollination alone, we use 1.2 million colonies in there. So we're using about half of our managed bees in almonds. And so this, I could almost stop the talk here, but unfortunately I won't. If we go from 5 million managed colonies down to 2.5 million managed colonies in that time period from the 40s to 2006, and we're using half of those bees in almonds, a number of those colonies are not mobile. In other words, we're using most of our managed commercial bees in almonds alone. And what happens when we have a 30% loss, which is what we estimate last year, we lost about 30% of the bees, not all CCD, and you'll see that in a minute. We lost 30% of our bees last year, not all due to CCD, but if we have no buffer left in the system to almost meet our pollination needs. So we have not had crop failures and things yet, but we're pushing an uphill battle with increasing pollination demands in almonds and other crops. And we're stuck at this 2.5 million managed colonies. Bees have ongoing problems that are preventing us from increasing those numbers. So to me, that really is the take-home message. In honeybees, the declines have gone on for a number of reasons. We did introduce parasitic mites, and that's kept us low. But we can't afford to add CCD if it's something new. We can't afford to add that on top of the problems that we already had within the industry and still continue to meet the pollination demands. Marla Spivak said if we had the one graph, we'd show all the arrows going to California. Well, there it is. And that just indicates that I think it's much higher. It's about 1.2 million colonies currently, but it's the vast majority of the managed colonies, of the managed mobile commercial colonies. The other half of our managed colonies are in people's backyards, and they're not mobile. So we rely on honeybees, and they are mobile, but with that mobility comes some stress. If you think about a honeybee colony, and you think about the bees themselves, the queen, the workers there, the wax comb, the honey, the pollen, and the brood, that colony itself is actually a nice smorgasbord out in the environment. There is no wonder that there's all these different organisms trying to take advantage of that. It has everything that a lot of these organisms need to grow and replicate. So the bees themselves are constantly on the defensive. And we've seen from the honeybee genome work that in fact bees themselves have very few defenses. In fact, they rely probably more on behavior and things like propolis as a defensive mechanism than they do on their own immune system. Symptoms of CCD, we've heard it, rapid loss of worker bees, excessive brood in the colony. So we're seeing this loss of worker bee population over a very short time window, and that's the unusual part. And when we sample those colonies and we look for things like varroa mite levels, we look for Nosema levels, we don't see a consistent picture, and yet we see this loss of worker bee population. So where have the bees gone? Why have they died? Why are they off in the woods somewhere? The media has really had a field day with this particular portion of the CCD story. The fact that the bees are disappearing. Well, the reality of it is, in bee health, for a bee to die away from the colony is advantageous. It's taking the pathogen with it. So in sac brood and other diseases that we know in honeybees, it's advantageous, and the worker is supposed to die away from the colony, it breaks the transmission cycle. So that's not unusual. In the myth part, if you listen to the media, you'd think that every problem in the bee industry is all CCD, and that's simply not true. And I think Marla pointed out, or maybe Dennis Van Engelsdorff, that bees, not all deaths in the U.S. are caused by CCD. And so the first thing we do when we go out and to investigate bee losses like this is to try to rule out the obvious causes. The Apiary Inspectors of America this past year, there was a number of surveys, it was run by Bee Alert Technologies, but the Apiary Inspectors of America is the data I'll show here, and they estimated that we lost 30% of all our colonies last year, of honeybee colonies, and that in a normal year, and this coincides with what Dennis said earlier, a normal year you'd lose 17% of those colonies. So does that mean that only 13% of our colony losses are due to CCD? Maybe that's true, maybe that's somewhat accurate. What's 13%? That's not a huge problem. It's a huge problem when you add 13% onto the 17 to 20% that you already had. That's when it becomes a problem. And then of those people reporting CCD within their operation, the losses were much higher. So within individual operations, we saw much higher losses. I'm just going to return to this media and the perception of CCD. If you look at what the media thinks about why we're losing colonies or what the problems are in the beekeeping industry, they knew about parasitic mites, but they think all of our other losses are due to CCD. In other words, CCD is the flavor of the month or the year or whatever, and that's what's impacting our bees. So losses, if you try to attribute them to different causes, the media would say that CCD is our number one problem. If you ask the beekeeper what their perception is, the beekeeper might say, well, 50% of his or her problems are caused by parasitic mites. And they're probably, maybe they're getting there. Mites are certainly underlying, and varroa mite in particular, are certainly underlying a lot of our problems. The beekeeper might then go on to say, well, yeah, and in certain cases, I've got a CCD problem. I've got other factors. Other factors could be a very big group. It could be Nosema. It could be pesticide exposure. It could be poor nutrition. It could be migratory stress or whatever. And then the last little bit of the top of the box is that they made a management mistake. Occasionally, there's going to be a management problem that's going to impact the overall survival. The reality, perhaps, is somewhere in between all of that. And what I'd like you to take home from this is that parasitic mites probably are underlying a lot of our problems, and they're at the base of all these pillars. We have all these existing management and other problems, the Nosemas, the tracheal mites, and everything else, and CCD could be just a combination of those other factors coming together in a new way, or it still could be a new pathogen, a novel pathogen, interacting with some of those existing factors. So to me, I don't want anyone to lose track of the fact that we, in the beekeeping industry, have a number of ongoing problems, and that CCD is something perhaps new, but it certainly is on top of all these other existing problems. You've already seen this. We went out last year and took a snapshot in time. We took a large number of samples around the country from representing a lot of different beekeeping operations from around the country, and then we looked at those, and we've discussed that. One of the other things that's come out of this work that's been a collaborative effort is that the new amount of people that become involved in the project, and it really is a testament to both just the working group that evolved and just to the collaboration that went on. And out of this, we've made great strides. My working hypothesis, and you've seen a number of these come up, is that we may have some primary stress going on within the colony, something that's acting on the colony, whether it's varroa mites, management, nutrition, or pesticides, and that those could be impacting the bees enough to allow something like a secondary pathogen to actually do the killing, whether it be Nosema or viruses, and that it's that some primary stress is going on in the colony that's setting them up for failure and allowing a secondary invader to take over and actually do the killing of the bees. I just want to say a little bit about Nosema apis versus Nosema serrani. Nosema serrani is the new species of Nosema that's come into North America and other parts of the world. It was just first described in 1996, and then in Spain and other parts of Europe, it was associated with heavy colony losses. Recent work in the lab that I had by Judy Chin and others in the lab have shown that we had Nosema serrani in the U.S. in 1995. That's the oldest samples we have. Every sample that we had, the historic samples that we've looked at, we found Nosema serrani. How much further back can we go? We don't know. But certainly from at least the data that we have, Nosema serrani is not new to North America. And what's interesting is that in the last 2 to 3 years, we're seeing an increase in Nosema levels. So if we had it in 95, what's changed in the last 2 to 3 years that's allowing these Nosema levels to go up? To me, the Nosema is not new. Something's newer in the last few years. We're seeing Nosema levels rise in commercial beekeepers. Back to our CCD samples, when we looked at strong colonies versus weak colonies for Nosema levels, and Dennis presented this a slightly different way, but what he pointed out was that in approximately half of our weak colonies or CCD colonies versus strong colonies, we did not detect Nosema spores in those samples. So while in those other samples, the ones to the far end of the graph, the Nosema levels were quite high in some colonies, but in other colonies they didn't exist. So I can't point the finger directly at Nosema. It's there. It's present in high levels in some colonies. It's absent in other colonies. So again, it's similar to, in some cases, to the virus story. You know, we see them there, but are they always consistent? And to the IAPV story, again, Diana's already touched on this, but it was the best predictor in the survey that we did at the time of colonies that were affected by CCD. I will point out, though, that with the IAPV story, we have not shown a cause and effect relationship, and that we are proceeding to do more collaboration in that area, and hopefully that story will become more clear as we move forward. So what are some of the next steps? And this is related to IAPV and others. We're going to increase surveys of both CCD and unaffected beekeepers in the U.S., both for IAPV virus and for other things. We've actually already done this second step, the survey U.S. bee samples prior to 2004. We just completed that, and in fact, we know we have at least one strain of IAPV in the U.S. prior to importation of Australian packaged bees. But as Diana showed, some of the Australian packaged bee IAPV and the colonies in California, they're intermixed, at least from the genetic trees that she created. So anyway, and then lastly, we get a lot of questions within the working group and ARS, which is the Agricultural Research Service that I work for, is what is APHIS going to do relative to the Australian packaged bee importation issue? APHIS does the regulation, ARS conducts research, and APHIS may make a decision relative to imports based on some research by ARS, but ARS does not make regulatory decisions. APHIS makes all regulatory decisions. We have been, over the past year, following three large migratory beekeeping operations on the East Coast. We've been monitoring those on almost a monthly basis, again, to look at So we don't have just this snapshot in time of a group of colonies, but we have a consistent set of samples over time for these colonies. And the hope was, or the objective was, that if these colonies within these three operations suffered CCD-like symptoms, we'd have this series of samples that we could go back to and look at for symptoms. And over that time, I'll show you the next figure, I believe, we were getting consistently, month after month, about a 5 to 10% loss of these colonies throughout or in about a month and a half period. So the colonies were dying about 5 or 10%, which again, if you're listening and you're thinking about trying to maintain cows, you know, you'd be pulling your hair out. But for the beekeeper, they can actually make up some of those losses. So they're losing 5 to 10% of the colonies every month or month and a half. And then we got into a fall situation. And this last data point that we took in Florida, if you look at, we have about 50% of our colonies alive, which is the green part over there. Starting here in the spring, 7%, 5% loss in June. And then July, we had another 5% loss, 10% loss in September. The last read that we just took in Florida, we lost 24% of the colonies in that Florida read. So are we seeing CCD reoccur? I think Dennis already pointed out, that was the first time this past fall when we got back to Florida with these colonies that we saw true what we were saying were CCD-like symptoms. Large amounts of brood present in the colony, very little worker population on those combs. We don't have the samples analyzed yet. We have the samples. We have the samples throughout this time period. Can we figure out what's going on? We're optimistic that we can. But again, even looking at that over whatever that is, an 8 month time period, 8 to 10 month time period, that beekeeper, those series of beekeepers, had lost 50% of their colonies in 8 to 10 months. It's an uphill battle for them, and it's an uphill battle because of even the ongoing problems that we had within the industry. So again, we know that this migratory pattern that the beekeepers have gotten themselves into to meet the pollination demand is adding stress to those colonies. I'm going to skip that. I'd just like to go back to this to reemphasize this point that, again, within that operations that we were following, they only had 50% of those colonies alive after 8 to 10 months. So this 50% replacement is unsustainable for the beekeeper. And if we're at, with our managed colonies, we're at about 2.5 million, and we need half of those in almonds. When we suffer a 30% loss, it does become critical. Right now, it's a beekeeper problem. But if we can't reverse the trends, it could very soon become a grower problem. And the growers out there are facing increased pollination fees to bring in healthier and healthier bees. So I'm optimistic that we can move forward, and I think we're making progress. We continue to do work in all of these areas, looking at stress factors, parasitic mites, pathogens, and pesticides. And no, we don't have all the answers. We think it's not going to be a single factor, but going to be a multi-factor thing that's going to come together and in the end. And it may not be the same situation that will explain all colony losses. And we know that at a minimum, the parasitic mites underlie a lot of what we're seeing out there, but they're not the sole cause. So with that, I'll end this. And I don't know, Diana, do you want to come up and say a word or two of closing? Anyway, I thank you very much for your attention, and I guess we could take a question or two, but thank you very much for your persistence, and I've enjoyed the time.